be grateful for your prayers this morning, courtesy of your attention for a little while. Yesterday, Roberta and I were driving through Alexandria, and saw a billboard sign by the highway. It said, "When thou passest through the waters, I will be with thee." And I was glad to see that there. To a large extent, this is still in many respects a Christian nation, and I'm grateful that it is. And I mislaid the paper that I had in my Bible to help me with this morning. So I need you to help me find that scripture. It's in Isaiah 45th of Isaiah, where the prophet spoke of those things. Would you read it for us, please, and reference the verse? That's far enough. Thanks, Sister Jeannie. Thank you very much. It's remarkable the background for those series of verses. Isaiah had the occasion, none of us get to choose when we're going to live in this world. Isaiah had the experience of living about the time of the captivity. And his experiences weren't all pleasant in trying to deal with the Israelite nation. In fact, Paul spoke about some people who were sawn asunder. And there are those, there are stories that have come down to us from the past, can't prove them, but likely some truth to it, that Isaiah was one of those. And when it came time for him to be put to death for his stalwart stand for the gospel, they put him in a log and sawed the log into while he was inside of it. Isaiah was a courtesan, we would say. He was the opposite side of the coin from Amos. Now, I'm not fluent in those ancient languages, but those who are say that Amos wrote like a shepherd would, like somebody who gathered fruit from sycamore trees. We'd say in our English, he used the word ain't a lot. Instead of saying, haven't got any, he said, I don't got no. Things like that. His language is crude, and it was rough. And he told people, that's what I am. That's all I was just somebody gathering fruit from sycamore trees, a husbandman, a farmer. And the Lord called me and put me to work in his kingdom. You can't tell God who to call and who not to call. He makes those decisions according to wisdom that's beyond mine. Isaiah was just the opposite. He was polished. He was educated. He was capable of sitting in the courts with kings and being made an ambassador to go to foreign lands if it had been chosen for him to do that sort of thing. And some of Isaiah's writings contain as beautiful language as has ever been written by any human being. Well, the first chapters of Isaiah, leading up to this one that we had read here this morning, are prophecies against Israel. Israel hadn't been doing very well, and Isaiah had a message from the Lord to reprove them. And then with the beginning of this chapter, almost with the turning of a page, he switched directions entirely and started pronouncing those kind of blessings that we have there. Would you read those first verses again, Sister Jeannie? Maybe the third verse or so where he talks about passing through the fire.
When thou passest through the waters, I will be with thee.
Now that wasn't spoken to the people who had gotten themselves under Nebuchadnezzar's rule, who had been busy disobeying the law of the Lord and filled their lives with sacrificing their children and offering sacrifices to heathens and so forth. And Isaiah made that very clear in the preceding verses. But it's almost like he was prophesying to two Israels. But a lot of the Bible is that way. And it isn't difficult for us, when you think about it a little bit, to transfer that down to the Christian era. The reason why that it could be given that way is because that is God's purpose toward his people always. It isn't only those people who happen to be descended from Abraham. It's anybody who will serve and follow the Lord. His heart is the same toward him. It's the attitude he would have had toward Adam, had Adam been faithful. It's the attitude that he had toward Abram when Abram was faithful. It is the attitude that he had toward Rahab when Rahab turned out to be faithful. She got some promises. She got some deliverance. I've marveled different times at Rahab. She didn't only ask for mercy for herself. She asked for mercy for her whole family. And the Israelites came in, conquered and leveled the city, and they had mercy on her and helped her in just the way that she'd been asked to do. The reason these prophecies are relevant still to us today, instead of just being an old story about some people to whom God had tried to show kindness, who instead had rejected and turned aside, the reason is relevant is because it shows the constant attitude of the unchanging God toward anyone who will turn their heart toward him. And he emphasized that in the New Testament era, with many prophecies concerning these kind of things. He said it's not an Israelite who's won outwardly, it's an Israelite who's won inwardly. He said we're related to the New Jerusalem, which has come down from above. He said from the Father of lights, in whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Now, life has got painful and difficult things in it, folks. It just has. I don't think the Lord intended it to be that way. I've often wondered, don't really care very much for husbandry myself. I grew up on a farm, but I never learned to love it like some folks have. But how hard could it have been to dress the vines there in the Garden of Eden? And when you got done to the end of the day, everything was your friend, and the Lord was there to meet you with a pleasant smile. That's about all the work Adam had to do, but he changed that, didn't he? He changed that. I remember an old concrete finisher one time, he was a Pentecost boy, and we were talking about that. He said, and he was sweating, and he was tired, and had been mud down in his boots. And he said, when I get up there, I'm going to have a visit with Adam. He said, I expect there's going to be a long line waiting to talk to him about what he got all of us into. Don't you imagine? So we got it to face. It's life. And sometimes life is painful and sometimes it's difficult. And sometimes it's got things in it that we didn't ever think the Lord would allow to come our way. He said that he'd not let us be tempted above that we're able. But I found out along God the way that God's idea of what I'm able to take and my idea of what I'm able to take are sometimes not the same thing. And his grace will take me farther, but sometimes he expects my force of resolve to take me farther than I wanted to go to. It's been that way for a very long time. So this passage of scripture that we have here today, I ask you the third time, Sister Jenny. Jeannie, that verse that begins with, when thou passest through the waters,
I will be with you.
Read above it.
Fear not, for I have redeemed thee. I have called thee by thy name. Thou art mine.
Hold on there just a minute. There's three things that he said. Fear not. And then what does he say?
I have redeemed thee.
I have redeemed thee.
I
have called thee by thy name.
Thou art mine.
Didn't he say something about I've created thee?
But now thus saith the Lord that created thee.
I am the Lord that created thee, and I redeemed thee.
And formed thee.
And I formed thee. And if you'll notice, all three of these things are past tense. They're things that have already happened. That's why I'm in the situation where I am. It's legal for us to come before the Lord when we are cast in our extremity, when we're desperate, when we feel like we have gone as far as we can go, and come to him and say, rehearse what he said to us. I am here, Lord, because you redeemed me. I didn't have any power to do this myself. I was an unsaved man, and I was headed for damnation. You redeemed me. I didn't have any decision about being in this world. When David got into the worst trouble of his life with Bathsheba, he came before the Lord and he said, against thee only have I sinned. And my understanding of the meaning of those words is, I don't blame Bathsheba. I don't blame Uriah. I don't blame my captain. I made my own decision and I'm responsible for this. And I'm not going to try to put it on anybody else. But I do have one thing that I can say to you, Lord. I was conceived in iniquity. There was something born in me that made me have a tendency to go this way. You know, it took a snake to get to Eve, but it didn't take a snake for Cain. There was something in him that the devil was able to work with, and that passed right on down. And I've had to deal with it too, and so have you. We got a natural inward tendency to go the wrong way. You look at the whole world and you have to say, not only today, but in all history, there's something basically wrong with the human race. They just choose to do things that common sense would tell you are not good for you. Because there's something in them that makes them do that. And I had that, and you did. And I can say to the Lord, I don't have any choice in it. That's what David said. In sin did my mother conceive me in iniquity. And the words have different meanings, but it's obvious what he's talking about there. And that put me in a disposition. And I can go to the Lord and say, I have temptations. And they hurt me. And they bother me. And sometimes I haven't been as successful in dealing with them as I should have been. And I counter that by saying, you redeem me. I don't have any power to do that. Once you've done something wrong, it's lost in the past. Time only goes one way. It's impossible to ever go back and correct it again. If we did the wrong thing one time, and all the rest of our lives spent everything we could do doing everything to try to live perfectly from that moment on, it wouldn't change the one that we got in the past. The only thing that can do that is the blood of the Lord Jesus Christ. He said it's past tense now. This has already happened. You created me and you redeemed me. And you had mercy on me and forgave me for the trouble that I've brought on myself. And so here I am. That's my status before you. And what's the final one that was in there? Call thee by thy name. And there are various interpretations of that. Adam Clark says concerning it that it should properly say, I've called thee by my name. In my mind, it fits either way. When the Lord calls us Son of Man, he is saying that his understanding encompasses everything there is to know about us. He knows our weakness. He knows our failings. He knows our strength. He knows what we can do. I remember Joshua. Israel failed. Joshua looked like he took the humblest route. He got down on his face and started begging God, what am I supposed to do? And God wasn't pleased at all. He spoke to him and said, get up, stand up on your feet and be a man. This had never happened if there wasn't sin in the camp, and it's your job to see to it that it's not there. The Lord knew what Joshua was capable of doing. I've called you by your name. I know who you are. And I know what you can take, and I know the grace that I've got to give to you. And then he goes on to say the other things that old brother Anonymous has immortalized into a song. It's number 37 in our hymnal, and I invite you to turn over there for a few minutes if you would. The passage, I don't propose to sing it this morning, but I'd like to read you the verse of it. It says, how firm a foundation, ye saints of the Lord, is laid for your faith in his excellent word. What more can he say than to you he has said, to you who for refuge to Jesus have fled? Go into nearly any Christian professing chapel in the United States today, or for that matter around the world, and look in the hymnal, and you're likely to find this song in there. It'll take eternity to reveal how many people have been cheered by the few verses that are here in this song. Robert E. Lee had it as one of his favorites, and he asked that it be sung at his funeral. Teddy Roosevelt was especially fond of this song. Andrew Jackson, when he was on his deathbed, he asked that this song be sung in his presence. Our hymnal contains what? Five hundred and 512 songs. And I have considered them. I haven't carefully examined every one, but to my best knowledge, this is the only one that is God speaking to us. The others mostly are us speaking to God. Where thou leadest, I will follow. Or they're speaking to one another. Be strong and valiant for the truth. Words to hearten or encourage one another. We have songs in our hymnal for weddings. And we have songs in our hymnal for funerals. And we have songs in our hymnal that are powerful messages to those that are lost. Why carelessly wait? You know that the end is nigh, no longer in darkness lie. Inviting and encouraging. But there's only one in there that I've ever found that's God speaking to us. The others are all us speaking to God or to one another. But look what this says. How firm a foundation, ye saints of the Lord, is laid for your faith in his excellent word. And then he says, the verses from Isaiah, where you read to us, Sister Jeannie, fear not, I am with thee. Be not dismayed. That song has a special meaning to me. I think of singing our songs here in worship service like boot camp, in a way. It's training. Soldiers in boot camp, they learn how to use a rifle. They learn how to march in formation and obey military commands. And the stress is there in the sharp tones of the drill instructor's voice, you know. You can't tell your left foot from your right, and you keep getting it wrong. And so he come along and kick you in the right foot. And he said, now you can tell which one's the right. It's the one that hurts. That's altogether different from combat. Combat is when you're in somebody's home and they're bad sick or they're dying. They're leaving this world and you're reaching out for everything you can reach. That's when these songs become real. We're just rehearsing them here. I appreciate the rehearsal and I get a lot of joy out of it, but it's when the chips are down, the battle is hard, things are difficult. I will never forget, I suppose in my lifetime, in this singing with this congregation in the courthouse over here in Ameet, after we'd won an acquittal in a trial that was threatening to put one of our congregation members behind bars for a number of years. And we sang a song, got reported in the paper. I thank thee, Lord, the song says, that I can cast my burdens all on thee. And the newspaper reporters around on all sides with the tears running down their cheeks and recording it and broadcasting it over the state of Louisiana, recognizing the song that we sang. We sang it because the Lord had mercy on us and answered our prayers, and we gained a great victory. And brother, it sounded good when we sing it here in our Sunday services, but I tell you, it's something different when you sing it and you're still alive. The battle's over. May not be altogether proud of what I did in the battle, but one thing I'll say, the enemy's dead and I'm still alive. And I'm going on by God's grace. That's what this song is to me. I've sung it in worship service many times. I haven't paid attention to the music, the air in this particular copy of it that we have, but they used to have it set to Adesta Fidelis, and I thought that was kind of silly, really, because it awakens different memories in your mind. But the rhythm, the tone of this song, well, when it got really meaningful to me was when I was young in the ministry. Somebody was sick in the congregation. The pastor called me up and said, we're going over there and pray for them. They're suffering and you've got to come. I don't want to be around people that are suffering. I don't have anything to give them. I'm a man. I can't pour some water on their head and make it all go away or something like that. What am I going to do? And I got over there with that old minister brother and he sat down and got ready to offer prayer and he said, let's sing first. And then he started singing to that person who's suffering, inviting them to reach through the pain and through whatever doubts and fears the devil planted in their mind. You know, when you're sick, the devil's no gentleman. That's when he'll come and attack you the hardest. He'll bring every one of your failures before your mind. He'll criticize every one of the saints to you. He'll make you doubt God if he can. And so there we were, An old brother started singing, "How firm a foundation." It's not like the devil's been telling you, sister. We got a firm foundation. We got a reason why we're doing what we're doing. It's because it works. Because it works. Because God answers prayer. Ye saints of the Lord. It doesn't apply to everybody. Just like there were two Israels. There was one Israel that got wandering down there and they got under Nebuchadnezzar's rule. But there was another Israel that the Lord's prophecy came to that I'll stand by you through it all. We're living in a world full of people, folks. Many of them, unfortunately, professing Christian experiences whose lives are void and empty of the true blessing of the Spirit of the Lord. No matter how that may ever be, God will still reign on His throne. There is a firm foundation. I mentioned earlier in my little thought this morning how that there are, if you look in the hymnals of nearly any Christian professing group around the world, you'll find this hymnal there. We haven't got God in a box. It isn't necessary that He come through our chapel doors and worship with us for people to be able to go to heaven. What's necessary is for them to believe His word. And anywhere that people do that in this round wide world, His blood will cover their sins and His mercy will reach to their lives and His word will be just as true to them as it has ever been to any of us. It's a firm foundation. It's established for eternity. I look at the things that are going on in our world today. There are major forces moving in the United States to not long ago, one of our most prominent leaders said concerning the Christian faith, people need to change their beliefs. We can't change the Bible. We can't change God. And if we did, we'd be without an anchor point with nowhere to go, cut loose. It'll never change. We have a firm foundation. And you could say this is God speaking to us. I know the author put this first verse in just a little words. He says, "How firm a foundation, ye saints of the Lord, is laid for your faith in His excellent word." Brother Leslie Busby brought a message one time dealing with something he'd read. An interesting saga. Years later, I had occasion to try to use some of that. So I called him up and asked him about it. And he said, told me the story again, but he said, "I'm also going to tell you, Brother Ed, when I got done with that message, an old minister came to me and he said, 'Brother Leslie, I just want to say one thing to you. Preach the word.'" Yeah, he said, "Don't just tell a story. Preach the word. It's not the power of the preacher that can ever save us, folks. It's the word. It's the word. Interesting experiences are valuable, but the word of God's got power in it. It's got life in it. It changes things." He's laid for your faith in His excellent word. What more can He say than to you He has said? I have read the scripture that says, "Where two or three are you to gather together in my name, shall ask what you will, it shall be done." And marveled at it and thought, that's incredible. It's hard for me to wrap my mind around. Until one day the Lord spoke to me and said, "Put yourself in my shoes. If you were promising to your people, where would you draw the line and say, 'No, this is beyond what I can do'?" He wants us to believe that he wants us to see this from His respective perspective. What more can I say? We got a world to face. He knows it's hard. He knows what Adam did to us. What more could He say to us? He has tried to make it as easy as He can. That's encouraging to me when I have to go through places I don't want to. When people do things that hurt me. I was weeping one time over some folks who had gone astray. My dad said to me, I was talking to him about it, and he said, even the Lord couldn't escape that grief. He stood on the hillside and wept over the city. "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how awful." Folks, your children can hurt you in this world. Your brother, your family, they can hurt you. If you care for people, watch the things they get in. Who wants to get a call at 3 o'clock in the morning? "We're locking your boy up in jail because we caught him with drugs in his car and he's drunk and ran over somebody." Who wants to get a call like that? It hurts. And you can cry and scream and read the Bible and do everything you can, but if your children are going the wrong way, it's going to hurt you. How firm a foundation. What more can he say than to you he has said? To you, there isn't any more he can give you. He knows it hurts. He won't make the world all turn around. He's got a plan for it. And he's going to let it go its course till the time of his choosing. But he has said everything he can. He makes the road as easy as he can from here to glory. Brother, sister, you and I will not be called on to suffer in this world one thing more than our journey to heaven requires. So it's safe to trust him. Now look what else he says. Fear not. Oh my goodness. Fear is perhaps as strong as human emotion. Fear not. How are you going to keep from fear? And fear is natural. Drop a couple of dozen rattlesnakes in this room and see how quick we all scramble up on the benches. Fear not. What is the antidote? He said, I am with thee. Be not dismayed. I think of John Bunyan and his Pilgrim's Progress. As a pilgrim made his way toward heaven, he came to a place where there's a lion on each side of the path, and the pathway right between them. But when he got up there, he saw they were both chained. They can roar. They can jump clear up and claw the edge of the path. Stay in the middle of the path, brother, and the lion's chains will hold them in. Fear not. I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. See, that's a message from God to us. I am thy God and will still give thee aid. I'll strengthen thee, help thee, and cause thee to stand upheld by my gracious, omnipotent hand. When through the deep waters I call thee to go, the rivers of sorrow shall not overflow. Well, you can think they're going to overflow. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, he said, for thou art with me. He didn't say, yea, though I walk through death. He said, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. I tell you, death is one of the hardest things there is to have to face in this world. And one of the things we all have to accept is that sooner or later people die. Yea, though I walk through the valley myself. I don't know how people do it who have no hope. I've read some of their stories. I remember Sister Bush, who used to be in this congregation, talking about a young woman that she saw leaving this world, screaming and crying. There was a false prophet in the room with her, and she rose up and shook her finger in his face and said, I'm lost and dying and going to hell, and I feel on fire already, and you're the reason, because you told me that I was clear with God when I was not. It seared her mind, and she passed the story on down to mine. I only got it secondhand, and it seared my mind too. Maybe you've got some experiences like that too that you could tell. I don't know how people live with themselves after that kind of a thing. I know a couple whose son on this day went out in his vehicle by himself and shot himself through the head. His mother had Thanksgiving dinner prepared at home for him and had no idea he was in that kind of despair. You never get over that. That's sorrow. To have the Lord say, the rivers of sorrow shall not overflow. I saw him. I wrapped my arms around him and I tried to hug him. He's not a hugging man very much, but he was broken that day. And I would have done anything I could to relieve his heart, but what can you do really? Human friends can bless and comfort, but brother, the balm to heal a heartache only Jesus can afford. He had to pick up his life and go on with it somehow or another and be the man he needed to be to his other children and in the community. He's got to have some help from God to do it. I don't know anybody in the world who would dare to say to a soul, when you pass through the rivers of sorrow, they'll not overflow. He didn't say you won't go through it. He said they won't overflow. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. It isn't really death. God has a way to stand between you and what that is. And he didn't say anything about stopping there. It's a walk. It's a journey. When you go through sorrow the way the Lord wants you to, every step he's got something new to give you. I remember when my mother died. I had a job, I had work I had to do, but for a long time, several weeks after Mother was gone, on my way home, had a little cemetery that I stopped by and had to have my private time there, shed some tears. It wasn't where she was, as close as I could get. And one day I was sitting there and the Lord spoke to me and he said, I have healed your heart of that and you can go on past it now if you will. If you choose to, you can make a shrine out of this and you can make this hurt you a lot more than I mean for it to. Or you can take your courage and go forward and my grace will enable you to stand. I had to reach a place before I could do that. You got some tears to shed, but there came a time when I realized this is not a stopping place in the valley of the shadow. This is a walk. Yea, though I walk through it. Through it. When you go through the waters, he didn't say you're going to stay in the waters and drown there. Have you ever seen people's lives get twisted by grief? Well, it can happen. Till you can't stand to think of it, till you can't lead a normal life anymore. It takes the grace of God to change that. When thou passest through the waters, give him one more time, Sister Jeannie, what's it say?
When thou passest through the
water, I will be with thee. Right there. I don't know anybody else who can go there with you. I'm a strange one, I know. But when I would go to the cemetery, I didn't really want anybody else there. I love my wife and she loves me, but that was Mother. I don't know how to talk to her about it. I've been married to her over 50 years and I still don't know how to talk to her about my mother. The Lord knows those places, folks, that nobody else knows. The Lord knows those places. When thou passest through the waters, the rivers of water shall not overflow. For I will be with thee, thy trouble to bless, and sanctify to thee thy deepest distress. I don't suppose the Lord intended people to go through that in this world. Adam didn't know anything about death. But we've got it to do. And since that has happened, I've found, to my humble astonishment, that the Lord has a way to turn that sadness into greater understanding and compassion toward my fellow man. I thought nobody had ever felt like I had, but I found out they're all over. A lot of people have gone through sorrow worse than I have. And I've learned that folks like that have an understanding and a compassion. If they let the Lord walk with them through it and heal the wounds as they go, it changes us, really for the better. You know, the Bible said, precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. Over and over, I've seen this, how the Lord has a way of letting us down into it so gently and surrounding us with blessing. It has to come. I've got a book. This is my book. In 1991, this congregation gave me this Bible, and everybody who was in it signed their name. Nobody I know has got enough money to buy this Bible. There's not anything special otherwise. But I go through it and read it, and probably a third of them are gone now. That's a natural process of life, and that's what's going to happen with you and me. The Lord's grace is what enables the younger generation coming on to pick up the same things and move forward with them. Let me read you the rest of this. When through fiery trials thy pathway shall lie, my grace, all sufficient, shall be thy supply. The flame shall not harm thee. I only designed thy dross to consume and thy gold to refine. What a thing to say. The poet put it this way. In the hour of sore temptation I may be, yet amid the trials Jesus' face I see. And then he goes on to say, we shall not be wounded in the hottest blast while the fiery darts are flying thick and fast. You can get wounded in the hottest blast. You need the Lord in the fire with you. When the Lord is in the fire with you, and the king's looking over the edge, and his strong men are cinders over here on the side, when the Lord's with you, is it too much to say, It's like the flames are only painted on the wall. They're not real. They'll burn off your bonds. You may not realize it while you're in the fire, what really happened. But when you get out and look back, you say, the thing that the devil intended to hurt me the most set me the freest. Well, the final verse said, beguiled away the time, the soul that on Jesus doth lean for repose, I will not desert to his foes. See, the other songs are us saying, Lord, I won't desert you. This one is his promise to us. Lean on him. I like my wife to lean on me. It doesn't take much. She just has to feel for my hand in the dark, and I'm all man. I'll stand right there and protect her. Have you ever felt like, Lord, I'm so beat down and whipped, I'm not even sure I can reach out to you? Just try it a little bit. It'll shock you how that big hand will reach out and get where you are and lift you up. I will not desert to his foes. This is a way of victory, folks. And I mentioned to you again that this is a song for time of battle. Well, this song was written in London. We know that much because we know the hymnals where it first appeared. Sometime in the 1700s, by some brother, he signed his name to it as K, just a K. The music director in the Baptist congregation where that took place at the time was somebody named Keene, and folks have supposed that maybe he was a man. There are three or four others who also were named K, who were known to the pastor who included it in a hymnal at that time, but nobody knows. 300 years later, and nobody knows. And does it matter? When you're singing this song, do you really care who wrote it? And for that matter, does it matter how famous or important you are, or I am, or how many people look up to you or me? What matters is, folks, hear the story of Jesus Christ. Any lips the Lord wants to use to get it through, that's what matters. This is not about you or about me. Look at the book of Acts. Paul the Apostle, the whole book is not about Paul, but a lot of it is. And it leads him down there to Rome and puts him in the prison house. There he is, confined in his own home, soldiers guarding the door for 2 years, and then just drops him. And that's where he is. This is a story of no ending. Well, the next thing that happened with Paul was a chopping block. But that isn't something we needed to hear. The story is really not about Paul. It's about Jesus. Some folks have said the book of Acts should be called the fifth gospel because it's telling the works that Jesus did after he was resurrected. And if we knew it, there'd be who knows how many books of Acts, because it picked out just one man and followed him to emphasize, not Paul, what Jesus was doing through Paul. And then it just stops abruptly. But it didn't stop. The reason it's not concluded is because the book of Acts is still being written, folks, in your lives and mine. And what's important in the book of Acts, of the acts of Jesus Christ after he was resurrected, is not that you and I be glorified, not that old brother K be glorified, not that we write a song that excites the whole church. It's that the gospel goes to everybody. When we sing this song in the hardship and the battle, what matters is that the Lord stands behind it and blesses it. And then we get it right. Thank you so much for the courtesy of your attention this morning. Amen.